I'm going to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum, and here is the schedule. We're going to hear a report from Representative Hansen on his Bill 3257, probably until 9 o'clock, or certainly no later. Earlier would be nice. And then I'm going to present our water update bill that we will be sending to finance, and then Representative Lanning, starting at 10 o'clock, will do a, I mean at 9:30, I'm sorry, will do a presentation on his bill. If there are no or few amendments to my bill, we will take it, we will send it out this morning. Otherwise, we will return tonight. That returning tonight was the posted schedule, but I am understanding that there's some folks who would rather not come back tonight, and that would be okay too. My schedule is open. With that, Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Do you want me to move House File 3257 for possible inclusion?
Yes.
I would move House File 3257 for possible inclusion in an omnibus clean water fund bill. And I do have an amendment that I believe is in members' packets but may not be out on the desk yet. And it is some technical corrections to get it in the proper form. And if members have that in their packet, I would move that amendment. Mm-hmm.
Members do have that in their packets, so Representative Hansen has moved House File 3257 for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. And now he's moved the A 34 amendment. I don't see any questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I want to proceed by reading part of the constitutional amendment that passed in 2008. The amendment that you just approved clarified that this request was coming from the Clean Water Fund, not the Clean Water Legacy Account. The Clean Water Legacy Account is a remnant of a fund that existed prior to the Constitution and it does not have any dollars in it right now. The Clean Water Fund is 33% of the receipts of the Constitution Amendment shall be deposited in a Clean Water Fund and may be spent only to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and to protect groundwater from degradation. And at least 5% of the Clean Water Fund must be spent only to protect drinking water sources. House File 3257, as amended, relates to inflow and infiltration, or I&I. And some of you may have heard of this. We did have a provision in the bonding bill that related to the public infrastructure for inflow and infiltration. If you haven't heard of it, or if you are hearing it for the first time today, I can guarantee you will be hearing about I&I again and again and again. I have with me Mr. Willett from the Metropolitan Council, who is going to walk us through inflow and infiltration.
Manager. For the record, I'm Jason Willett. I'm Finance Director of MCES. That's the Environmental Services Division of the Metropolitan Council. We are the wastewater utility in the metropolitan area and the largest one in the state. My guess is about 60% of the sewer households in the state send their wastewater our way. And I'm going to walk through this PowerPoint slide. We're not going to futz with hooking up the computer if you want to just walk through the slides with us. First of all, just one quick slide again. Environmental Services, Division of the Met Council. We have seven plants, and we run wastewater utilities for the seven county metropolitan area. We have about 600 miles of big pipes that go between cities, and the cities own their own pipes down the city streets and stuff. We have about 105 cities directly connected, and we serve the other communities in the metropolitan area when they have their septic tanks pumped and they bring it to our plants and so forth. The next slide is an illustration of I&I. And I want to draw your attention to three things here on the house. You can see the little blue rain leader down the side of the house. There is also an illustration of a connected foundation drain at the bottom of the house. And finally, the broken house lateral. Those are all private sources of I&I. In terms of the roof drain and the foundation drain, it was made illegal to connect new houses in that manner sometime in the 60s or 70s, but it was never really made required that older houses disconnect them. So we're still trying to get that done. The broken house lateral issue really can occur at any time. It's probably going to be an ongoing problem. Some of the pipes that were put in the 50s and 60s were clay pipes, and they've just essentially deteriorated as roots or other issues have occurred on them. The other sources of I&I on that illustration really relate to the public infrastructure, and that's not what this bill is about. I do want to point out, as well, on the broken house lateral, there is a potential for outflow. We're the sewer utility, so we just talk about I&I, the inflow and infiltration, and really no one's measuring it, so I can't tell you how real that is, but there's certainly anecdotal evidence that in some cases there could be outflow from these broken pipes, so that would be sort of like a septic tank without a drain field where the water could go down into the groundwater table. The legislation is needed because essentially collecting this clear, clean rainwater and flushing it down the sewer eventually goes into the Mississippi, wastes drinking water resource for future generations. The water can and should be put oftentimes into people's backyards. It infiltrates into the groundwater. Of course, it would take a long time to get to the aquifers, but it's a resource that we shouldn't be wasting. We also have a substantial risk of sewer overflow in our pipes. When we get surges, actually this week, as we've had the rapid snow melt at our metro plant, our wastewater that we receive is up, I think it's 35 to 45 million gallons a day, which kind of shows you the kind of situation we have to deal with. A lot of that comes from these private sources. We have, unfortunately, occasionally overflowed into area water bodies and into people's basements. The sewer backs up in the lowest point when the pipes get full. This is one of the biggest challenges in the metropolitan wastewater system. There have been a lot of money spent on greater Minnesota issues, all good deal, but this is for us is a primary issue now. And we have actually forced our city customers to work on the problem, both public and private, creating fiscal stress, and they've been asking us for help. The next slide talks about the eligibility, and Representative Hansen has touched on that. This language is extracted from the state statute, comporting with that constitutional amendment. What we're really talking about here is protecting. We're protecting the quality and the quantity of waters in Minnesota. And I've listed a couple of the points in that statute where it talks specifically about preventing surface water from becoming impaired, as might happen with a spill, and supporting measures to prevent degradation of groundwater, which could happen with outflow, as well as we're just degrading the groundwater quantity if we waste it and flush it down the toilet. There have been people questioning whether or not this use would be supplementing traditional sources of funding, and for the most part, there really haven't been a traditional source at all. A lot of the house connections haven't been disconnected. Recently, we have tried to get more of that fixed, and I think Representative Hansen could testify that West St. Paul has done a lot. They've done good work, but not without pain, particularly from private citizens on fixed income. What has been fixed is largely done with private money. Occasionally, cities have matched it a little bit on their own. We also had a little bit of program on our own recently with some special one-time money that I can mention. But there really hasn't been a traditional source of funding for this problem at all. I do want to just mention that in addition to the water quality issues here, there's a substantial fiscal impact. We're looking at unnecessarily spending $1 billion in the metropolitan wastewater system. And while I know that's not one of the qualifications for use of the fund, I hope it's not a disqualification that we could save a lot of that money and the rates that might have to go up. I listed here the cities in the metro area that we've had measured excessive II in the last 7 or 8 years. Some of these have been able to fix it, but most of them are still on the list, frankly, and need continuing work to try and fix their II. I have two slides here just to tell you quickly about our one-time program. Again, we did have about $800,000 that was returned from a prior grant program, so it certainly isn't a traditional source of funds. We awarded that to cities that passed it through to private property owners, and you can see the work completed there several times the amount of money. So there's a leveraging going on, both private and city money that's being used, which we also think is a good deal for the metropolitan area. The average cost of fixing these broken service laterals was about $5,000. This little program repaired 556 of them. We also allowed disconnection of the foundation drain. We are actually only at 15 of those. The average cost of that is less. It's about $2,000. And the next page shows, really the only reason I wanted to show you this was, boy, the demand for this program just took off until we ran out of money in May. There's a lot of pent-up demand. People are willing to do the right thing, especially if you give them a little money to help them out with that. Finally, in summary, the $2 million request retains water resources for Minnesota. It protects the environment by reducing or eliminating spills, including potentially outflow. It leverages investments from private parties and cities. It saves dollars because if we have to build the pipes, it's roughly 6 times more expensive for us to just provide that capacity. This is a program, Madam Chair, that doesn't need more assessment or study. We know there's a demand for it. The dollars, if you were to award them to us, would support water quality and water supply improvements and work and jobs this summer, as soon as we could get the money. Madam Chair, I'll try to answer any questions you have.
Madam Chair, if maybe I could. I think to bring it back to the environmental side and purpose is you have, when Mr. Willett is talking about outflow, talking about groundwater contamination, that may be groundwater but not drinking water. But when you look at the cities that are on this, some of them are in areas where there are surficial sand aquifers with groundwater in them. So if a pipe that's 50 or 80 years old is breaking, not only does water come in, but water can go out. And then you have that sewage that is going into that cross-contamination that can occur there. The roof drain and the connected drain in that lateral. We put money in the bonding bill for the public. If you look again at the photo on the page 3, you see the main lines that are going along the street. That's where the public investment went for the bonding. Many of the homes that are dealing with this are older homes. They may have the original resident in those homes. Most of those residents haven't heard of I&I when the inspector comes and knocks on their door. The inflow relates to surface water because it goes into wastewater treatment plants and it's having to be dealt with whether it's clean or dirty. And it's impacting quantity as well. So we have a groundwater and a surface water issue here. And we realize this is a huge issue. Madam Chair, I had mentioned that maybe we, after deadline, we have maybe some examples or we could have another hearing on this because I know there's limited time today. But this problem will not be going away. And I know there are opinions on use of the fund. I would want to mention that it's not only a metropolitan issue. I've talked with Representative Reinhardt in Duluth, and they're struggling with this as well. I believe in Duluth they have assessed a fee, a property tax fee, for the inspections to actually go do the inspections and there's no voluntary nature in this. If you have a problem, you have to fix it. You're not given best management practices. You're not provided education. You have to fix it, and you are assessed.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Hansen, in the city I live in, one of the things happening more frequently because of the age of the storm sewer pipe as well as the parallel sanitary sewer pipe, they're both breaking down. And one leaches into the other one, and it causes, you know, one of them is open to receive water from all over. The other one's a closed pipe. It's not closed anymore because water goes from the storm sewer when we have high water through the sewer. The only way it comes through your floor drains is when you have things like that happen. And there's a lot of flooded basements just because of that.
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, I think when we talk about infrastructure, we think about the infrastructure that we see, the roads and the bridges. But there's a huge amount of public infrastructure throughout the state that we don't see, and because we don't see it, we take it for granted that the water is going to be removed off the street, or when we flush, it's going to go where the drain out of the basin. But it does go somewhere, and the public was involved in paying for that, and it was generations ago. So whether it was Fairmont or West St. Paul or Duluth, those investments that were made generations ago and now are starting to hit their life expectancy, and it's going to be a huge challenge for us wherever we are in the state to deal with it. I'm sure. I believe there are some other folks who want to testify.
Okay. Representative Torkelson would like to ask a question first, and then we'll have some other folks come up.
Thank you. Looking at this diagram, where does the homeowner's thank you, Madam Chair, to the testifiers. Where does the homeowner's responsibility end as far as maintaining this infrastructure?
Madam Chair and Representative, certainly all the stuff in the house and the pipe that goes to the street are privately owned. Lots of times people don't know that. There's a difference occasionally, my understanding is that sometimes at the edge of the street it becomes public property, and sometimes not until it gets to the center and actually connects to the city pipe. And I think that may be different city to city. But once you're beyond the street, that whole pipe you own. And if it's broken, it's your cost.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's my understanding too, that the homeowner really owns those pipes at least probably to the curb or the boulevard, and in some cases beyond. And it's really the homeowner's responsibility to make sure that they are working as designed and to repair them as necessary. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative, I don't know that there is a consistent program to require that. In some cities, there are. In a lot of cases, problems have just gone undetected. Under pressure now from the Metropolitan Council, some cities have done inspections and have ordinances that require that fix, but some haven't.
That's all for now.
Thank you. Let's have some.
I could maybe just address something with that.
Yes.
On the private nature of this, I want to contrast with precedent that we have for use of the Clean Water Fund, specifically with feedlot cost share upgrades, where we provide Clean Water Fund money as a cost share for upgrade. And that's for a business that can deduct, any expense used for the upgrade. Individual homeowners cannot deduct on their taxes the individual except expense for the upgrade. They can deduct the public purpose. So on a business, of which agriculture is a business, we provide a cost share when there's a deduction. We've set the precedent already for upgrades to meet water quality goals where there are requirements. These folks are being required. There isn't much of a difference in terms of the precedent that we've already set.
I knew that you were going to wake up Representative Hamilton. Now, I don't think he was asleep, but he certainly came alive. How's that? Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And the bill that just passed out of this committee did deplete those funds that were used for cost share dollars.
Not deplete.
Well, it was a large share of them. And those dollars are used for the small family farms under 300 animal units and less. And like I said, there was a large share of those dollars that were reduced in that last bill that passed out of here.
I think it was 7% of the funds, if I remember correctly. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, and to Representative Hansen, I would also remind the representative that each and every one of those farmers has a septic system that he is responsible for, that takes care of the waste from his house and pays for it completely out of his pocket, and generally, although there are some programs to help upgrade septic systems, but it is, as a rural landowner, it's my responsibility to install and maintain the entire septic system that treats the waste from my home, and I don't believe that's the case in most cities.
Madam Chair, I think in the Clean Water Fund we have funded septic system upgrades as well for private landowners in rural areas.
We have. This is probably one of the issues that deserves a large discussion in this community about the balance of costs of not just sewage, whether it comes from a farm or a rural house or a metropolitan house, but the drinking water. I mean, it's both sides, and we could use all the Clean Water Fund in just those two issues alone. I have no doubt in my mind about it. In fact, it would take me about 20 minutes to do the spreadsheet. So this is a part of, I think, a larger discussion that we need to have. So if folks want to just testify for a minute or two, and then we're going to lay this bill on the table. Lay it over, I mean, not on the table. Yes, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. We represent 80 cities across the metropolitan area, or about 90% of the population in the metropolitan area. And I'm here today to speak to our support for this legislation. I won't repeat a lot of the things Mr. Ouellette said, but we do think this is an appropriate use of the Clean Water Fund. It's really about keeping clean water clean. And this isn't a very important for cities, for many cities, over 50 cities across the metropolitan area that have been identified as being contributors of excess inflow and infiltration into the regional wastewater system. This is a very cost-effective measure. It's environmentally appropriate, and I would urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. We have someone else who would like to say something.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I don't envy your position. My name is Paul Austin. I'm with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And after listening to the testimony on Tuesday and thinking about this year and the next 23 years, you're all going to be faced with some very tough decisions. We've always been of the opinion that MCA and throughout the broader environmental community that when a funding request for something like the Clean Water Fund comes in, you've got to put at least two tests on it. One is, does it meet the purposes of the fund? And the other, is it supplementing a program and not substituting for traditional support for that program? In our opinion, in our analysis, we have a hard time drawing a direct line between water quality and this INI proposal. INI is not a bad program to work in. INI reduction is a valuable capacity and infrastructure protection measure. However, the impaired waters in the metro area right now aren't being affected by INI inflow issues. INI is a wet weather issue. The TMDLs that are under progress right now for the Mississippi River for nutrients are low water issues, dry weather issues where INI is not an issue. MCEA can't find any cleanup plans that tag INI as a huge source of nutrients, for example, that would be driving this as an impaired waters cleanup issue. And protecting, you know, waters is obviously a valuable thing to do. Right now we have impaired waters in the metro area. So this is where you have to not only ask about the purpose, but then the priorities within the purpose. And that, I think, is where the challenge is going to be for this committee for the next 24 years, is there's not enough money to meet every project. Then you have to move to priorities within the purposes, and at least from MCA's perspective, impaired water cleanup is a higher priority than protecting a water that's already impaired. The other issue is much tougher to sort out, this issue of supplementing a program without substituting for. It's evident that the Met Council and Representative Hansen are proposing this as a new program. It may or may not be, depending on how you look at it. I remember living in Minneapolis in the mid-80s and seeing notices from the city about disconnecting my downspouts and my basement sump pumps. This is a long effort and a long-standing effort, and how you sort out whether that's actually a substitution or not is very difficult. From where we sit, when you marry that gray area with this mismatch on the need side, we just don't think this is a great fit for the Clean Water Fund itself. Again, I&I control is worthwhile, but it's been done from other sources in the past. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And with that, members, keeping on our strict time schedule here, I'm going to lay this over. And Representative Purcell, if you will take the chair. For those of you who came in a little bit later, at the beginning I announced that we were going to have three sections in this meeting, and this is the middle section. At 9:30, Representative Lanning is going to come and present a bill. We may or may, I don't know how far we will get on this. We will be coming back tonight if we don't complete it. And that was our schedule originally. So with that, Chair Purcell, I would like to move House File 3502 to be passed and returned to Finance with the recommendation that it be referred to the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division.
Very good, Representative Guinness. And did you have an amendment?
I do. I would like to move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the order that I wanted. This is, members, is to delete all that you have up here.
Any questions or comments about the DE1 amendment? Does everybody have that? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment is adopted. Please proceed.
Thank you. I have another amendment. This is a math amendment because when we were doing the math on this bill, and you'll hear in just a minute because we're going to have Mr. Reinholz help us with the math on this, on line 2, because I thought we had more money than we did. And so it's my mistake. On line 2.23, take out 720,000 and add 558,000 on line 3.10, delete 719,000 and insert 557,000. And that would put the bill in the order I'd like it. So I would move that amendment.
Representative Guinness, could you repeat that one time for me?
On line 223, delete 720,000 and insert 558,000. And on line 3.10, delete 719,000 and insert 557,000.
Thank you.
And I would move that amendment.
Is everybody clear with the amendment? Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment's adopted.
Members, what you have before you is essentially a two-part bill. If you will remember from last year's clean water bill that went out of this committee to Representative Murphy's committee, we set aside $5 million for groundwater protection, but we did not spend it because we did not have a plan. So that's one of the pieces we're going to talk about. The other piece is we left a little bit more money on the bottom line than we needed to. And so with that, I asked Mr. Reinholz if he could give us some help in determining what would be the correct water reserve fund. And he has done that on a spreadsheet that looks like this, only it's not as marked up. And if he would explain that to you.
Members, if you would, I'm going to refer to a spreadsheet that's called the Clean Water Fund Reserve in the on the top line. If you should have that in your packet. I'll give you a moment to pull that out. As Representative Aguinia said, she asked me to put together a calculation on what the reserve should be for the Clean Water Fund Reserve. It could be done in numerous ways. What I did use here was a method that was used in the recent tax study that was completed by the finance. And it's information that was from 2009. And so I used that information since it was already there and was standard. And what they came up with, and most of this is just statistics, and you probably don't want to hear it, but it's the volatility of sales tax in Minnesota is measured as 2.06%. They used a confidence rate of 95%. What that means is one in every 20 years you'll be wrong. Statistically as being acceptable rate of error. I mean, then all it does is calculate then that the reserve should be 3.39% of the revenue year total in order to have that 95% confidence rate. Just calculate a number that shows the budget reserve then, assuming that, and the forecast is $81 million coming in 11. The budget reserve should be $2.748 million. The balance right now is 5.173, so the important number really is using this calculation that where it says funds over reserve and available for expenditures is the 2.424, approximately $2,424,000 is available reasonably to use as expenditures and holding back what should be a reasonable amount for reserves. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Reinholz, the 95% confidence, does that take into account in a regular economy you would have a 95% confidence? What would the confidence level be with the economic situation we have today?
You know, when you do, Representative McNamara, when you use statistics and you use a period of time, you don't normally make adjustments for 1 year. You know, you don't try to say, well, we're in a terrible year or we're in a good year. These are statistical averages, and over a 20-year period, we should be all right.
Representative McNamara.
Well, if I could follow up then, if the last 2 years seem to be in the lower 5% of the probability, that would mean that if we looked over the last 50 years and said this might be in the lower 5% of the good economy, that would lead me to believe that this is the kind of year when that wouldn't work.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, actually, that is actually taken care of in the forecast. When they make the forecast, they're forecasting based on current conditions. So that shouldn't matter in the probability and the statistical rate used. Current conditions, since it's using a forecasted number and we're basing the needed reserve on that amount, that should be taken into account the current projected conditions for the next year and a half by Mr. Stinson and their forecast.
Okay.
I'm using the number that came out of that forecast.
Representative Genius.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. I think that is helpful because we have at least a statistical reason for choosing the number that we are going to operate from. So with that, members, I would invite you to look at the second spreadsheet that Mr. Reinholz did. And I'm going to just give you an overall of where we're going. And then I will get into more specifics. But just to give you the roadmap, What I'm proposing in this bill is to open up five things that we did last year and add additional money to them. So let me just go over those five things. Three are in Bowser. We're going to open up the, and this is additional monies, so they're not taking away from anybody this time. This is very different than the last bill I brought to you. We're going to, in the Board of Soil and Water Resources, it's opening up three things, the riparian buffer easements, and that's their grant program, that's their competitive grant program, the Watershed District grant program, and the wellhead protection, that is the drinking water wellhead protection program. And you heard from Bowser about how much demand there was for each of these programs. So we're just giving them some of the extra money, essentially. The second thing we're opening up was Representative Scalzi's bill of last year, and essentially adding money to the coal tar sediment cleanup grants of $300,000. That will go to local units of government who are trying to clean up their coal tar mess. That leaves some extra money to meet the request from the Pollution Control Agency, who wants to do more study on how to remediate this coal tar in the best fashion possible. The next thing we're opening up is the Duluth Harbor Water Improvement. I'm putting $200,000 in that. There's a substantial amount of federal money there that I think it would be good for us to capture. And of course, that is the area that is going into Lake Superior, which makes it a major problem for us. The last piece of this new money would be $310,000 for the Pollution Control Agency as it continues to work on its nitrogen standard. That is not how much they need, but this is how much they would use in a year. It's going to be a multiple year process, and I think we will have to do this again next year. So with that, those are the suggestions for the additional money that we had left over. And the language in the bill, which I can go over with you later, reflects that. The second portion is, if you'll remember this report we had in this committee talking about the developing a groundwater level monitoring network for the 11 county metropolitan area. And this is what I'm proposing we spend the $5 million that we set aside for groundwater on. Many of the communities in the metropolitan area are 100% dependent on groundwater for drinking water. And if you will see this, I'm sure you're, since we heard about the study, I'm not going to go over it, but I just wanted to call to your attention something in your packet from the Star Tribune that just came out, had nothing to do with this bill, but it's someone, Mr. Sherborne, who is a water resource specialist with the Anoka Conservation District, said essentially this. He's warning of a crisis that few can see, and essentially if the Metropolitan Council population projections come true, increased water use in urban parts of the metro area will lead to significantly lowered aquifer levels to the detriment of lakes, ponds, and even some shallower private wells. And in the end of the article, he says, it's a regional issue. No one city can address this on their own. And I think that is the critic. I think he's dead on in his analysis of that. So what I am proposing that we spend this money on is this non-stressed well system, and I would like actually folks from DNR to come up because they know this like the back of their hand. So they are going to be answering the technical questions, which I cannot answer for you. But it's the non-stressed well system in the metropolitan area. It's something we're going to have to do in outstate Minnesota, too, and I totally acknowledge that, but we're not ready to do that yet. I mean, outstate isn't ready to do it. So this will pay for essentially half of the issue we've got out there. The other half will be a local matching fund, and the local match is a fee in this bill of 0.008 cents a gallon on water. You'd ask for that, and we've got that. And there are two examples in this handout in your brochure. An Edina resident would pay 32 cents a person or 69 cents a household per year for this major water monitoring system. A Wyoming resident, which is, gives another perspective, would be 22 cents a person per year or 63 cents a household per year. I have talked about to the League of Cities about this, and they may want to come up and share their what they're thinking about. But basically, that is this whole bill, and I think the questions on the monitoring are best addressed by DNR.
Mr. Locksmith, Representative Anderson, do you have a question? Or?
Mr. Chairman, Kent Lockesmo from DNR Waters. And as Representative Lugenia said, we were directed to do this this report that we previously discussed in this committee. And that identified what we felt were the needs for a monitoring system for the 11 county metropolitan area. And I think that was probably the genesis for this idea and this this funding mechanism. And as she said, there's two parts to this. One is looking at the unstressed network where you put in an observation well where it doesn't, it isn't impacted by adjacent wells. You try to find a location that's somewhat isolated versus looking at a municipal well. If you measure there, you have the impacts of pumping. So we also look at a system to use the information that would be available from municipalities. And I know municipalities have indicated that they have lots of wells available, they have lots of information, and we have to figure out how to obtain that information and how to get that into a data system. And part of this is to develop a data system for all the agencies to use, and that's compatible with information that PCA or Ag or Health is obtaining. And we will be working with those other agencies to achieve that. I think real briefly, that's a synopsis of the proposal.
Representative Anderson.
If I can pause for a moment here, I'm just, if you can go to somebody else for a moment, please. Oh,
very good. Representative Hackbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Locksmith. You're speaking to this. Is this a department bill that came forward?
Mr. Chairman, no. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I'm pretty concerned about this new account and this money, and I mean, we've got the 0.375% with this new Clean Water Fund money coming in. We've got hundreds of millions of dollars on water already in different areas throughout the state. I mean, maybe we can move some of that money around or something, but here we're creating a whole new fee, a whole new tax, and if I heard you right, Representative Lugenius, this is for these counties now, but eventually do it throughout the state, statewide. It looks like it's going to be on anybody that is going to be taking a lot of water out of the ground. Are we talking about farmers, not just counties and cities and people with municipal water systems, but this sounds like a lot of money is going to be collected to put these wells in, and a whole new fee. Don't we have enough money that we can move around and come up with doing these monitoring wells some other way? Boy, oh boy, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars already. We've got the new 3/8 money, new Clean Water Fund, and now we're going to do more? We're going to put more of a burden on the people?
If I could respond.
Representative Genius.
Respond to that. in all of the clean water money that's gone out, with the money that goes out to Bowser and goes out to rural Minnesota, there are matching funds. There are local matches. The money, if we were to ask outstate Minnesota to pay for the whole metro groundwater monitoring system, I don't think that would be fair. It's what I am doing is providing the local match along with, so it's going to be a roughly a 50-50 match. We don't know exactly, I can't make that precise for you right now, but it's roughly a 50-50 match with the Clean Water Fund paying 50% of the cost and local residents paying 50% of the cost. That's one thing. Secondly, we'll never develop any kind of system like this outstate. What I, you overread, I think, or maybe I overspoke. We need to do more work in outstate Minnesota. One of the things that we're doing right now is providing through the Clean Water Fund money for atlases that looks at the groundwater by county. And we're spending a lot of money on that in outstate Minnesota. And in my judgment, we should continue to do so until every county in outstate Minnesota is covered. That's going to take a while, and it's very, very expensive. I wish it weren't. It just is. So none of the things that we are planning on doing in the overall come to us cheaply. And I do think it's necessary to understand that everything we're putting out does have some sort of local match. And so the money, this fee and this account are the local match. And the account is done to sequester the money to say it cannot be spent for anything else. We don't want to be in the position of a couple of years ago where some people were trying to steal drinking water money. No. This is sequestered, can only be spent for one thing.
Representative Anderson.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wiginius, I'm just looking at the handout that you have here, mm-hmm. and I just have several questions here. On the portion here, it has the water use fee, and it has the summer fee, and then it has the $8 fee. So are the water use and the summer fee, those are the current fees that they already pay. And we had that farmer testify just the other day, and he talked about some fees. Is that, can we get some information on how much those individuals pay in addition? And also just residential, if you can send that to me, that would be helpful for me to know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, agricultural irrigation is a center pivot for ag irrigation. Uses about 45 million gallons of water a year. That's under the minimum fee in this fee schedule. So their fee is $140 per.
Say that again.
Their fee is $140 million per installation. Per center.
$140 million?
Say it again.
$140.
I was going to say. Whoa.
I was going to balance the budget.
That's some good water out there. Yeah. Okay.
$140.
And then the other question that I have, Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, is I noticed that Minneapolis and St. Paul are included in this fee schedule. Can you tell me why that would be?
Minneapolis does not use groundwater at all. We use river water. And because we use river water, we pay a lot more for our drinking water because we have to clean it up. And we have to clean it up substantially because the Mississippi River is more polluted than it should be. Our water rates are higher than anybody else who can use groundwater, which is uncontaminated. The second thing is if Minneapolis was to go into the groundwater and use that, there for sure would not be enough for everybody else. So we're actually paying a lot more not to go into the groundwater.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, I mean, all water is connected, and I just feel that why should they escape from this if we're going to impose this on everybody else and having to pay for it? All the water is connected.
If you would like to make that argument, then I would hope that you all would be willing to help pay the Minneapolis water fee for the major plant that we put in to clean up our water so everybody else could use the drinking water. And I would be grateful
if the rest of the metropolitan area would help us pay for our water plant.
Well, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I don't want to open up a can of worms, but I think that my area already does. It's called LGA.
Mr. Lazenor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, on line 4.31 of this bill is the existing fee for those small water users like an ag irrigation that uses under $50 million.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Director Lacashmal, can you direct me again to the, where you just pointed out? Were you on the delete off?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, on line 4.31 is the existing language relating to fees. That's for those minimum or the smaller appropriators.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got two lines of questioning. Representative Wagenius, can you show me where I'm not following? I thought the intention was for small users to also. Where does it show that only at a certain threshold will people pay this fee?
Representative Wagenius.
Everybody pays. It is a volume-based fee. So if I use 8 gallons of water, well, in order to get up to pay it, it's done by gallon, to be fair.
Representative Magma.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I misunderstood Director Lacashmal. Did you say there wouldn't be any increase for the center pivots in Dakota County, or will there be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, there would be. And what I was referring to is the base fee is that one that's found on line 4.31. That's the existing fee. If you looked at the handout that was in your packets, it has some examples. And ag irrigation on the third page of this example is shown as they pay their basic water use fee. The existing fee is $140. And then the monitoring fee, based on 45 million gallons, would be an additional $360 for a total of $500. And that's based on the clearly on the volume at $8 per million.
All right. Thank you. I see, and I misunderstood. I thought you were saying to Representative Anderson that there wasn't going to be a fee increase, so I misunderstood. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I'm going to go back to, I'm trying to understand, your community, Minneapolis, is not going to be paying any additional water monitoring fee because they use surface water instead of groundwater. The other communities, St. Paul, partially would benefit from this. And isn't there not a third community upriver of you, somebody at Coon Rapids, or somebody that pulls from the river?
This fee is based on folks who use groundwater only. So people who use river water are not paying because they're not using this water.
Representative Magna.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and the logic of that is that we want to let some people in the metro not have to share in this fee, but they will share in the benefit. Will they be part of these grant programs for coal tar or the monitoring? Will they be able to share in the information and be benefited by the information that the whole metro will get?
Representative McNamara, I'm feeling like I'm dealing with a basket of apples on one hand and a basket of oranges on the other hand. The water issue is a separate issue, and here is why. Minneapolis, I know it's fun to pick on the biggest city in this state, but one of the things that goes on is that everybody else has cheaper water because Minneapolis has more expensive water. We do not pay for it with LGA. We pay for it with water fees. And with water fees, we have had to build a major, huge new water treatment system to clean up the river water so we can drink it. So we pay more per gallon of water than anybody else in the metropolitan area, period.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I understand that. And, you know, your city has made decisions in how they do that. But it's clear that this is an opportunity to raise a fee, tax everybody else except your community and partially St. Paul. But for the farmers and the nursery business and those that work in Dakota County, this is a tripling of their water fee at a time when demand for plant material is 50%, prices are 50%. So what we're saying, even though you're only getting 25% of the money you used to get a few years ago, we're going to triple the fee for your, well, it's more than triple. It was $140 and now it's going to go to $500 a year for the poor people in Dakota County. But the city of Minneapolis, we're exempting you from this water fee. You don't have to pay it. Dakota County, we'll stick it to you. Mr. Chair, I'm going to move an oral amendment on line 6.18. After the word groundwater, add and surface water. And I guess I would ask Representative Wagenius what she thinks of that oral amendment.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I thought I'd already expressed an opinion on that. I am going to oppose the amendment. One of the things that you invite me to do is to come in with an amendment that says that everybody else in the metropolitan area will participate in paying off the cost of our water treatment system. That would be petty on my part, and I'm not going to do it, but I will oppose your amendment.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I oppose the amendment, too. I think the conversation we're trying to have here is what does it cost to take water and use it? And I guess it doesn't sound like to me that anybody right now is paying the full cost of their water. We're supplementing it in all sorts of ways. Through the PFA, we're building water treatment plants on the fringe of the metro area. And the testimony has been, you know, as suburbanites, we've asked, well, why should our constituents pay for new wastewater treatment plants in places where they don't live? And the explanation we've gotten is because if people had to pay for their own water treatment plants, they couldn't afford to live there. So I think what we're talking about is the concept of user fees here and paying for figuring out how much groundwater is left. And I don't understand the disconnect here. Representative Wagenius has been pretty clear that the city of Minneapolis doesn't use groundwater, and that her proposal is about groundwater monitoring, and that groundwater is cleaner, and those of us who use groundwater spend a ton less money cleaning our water. So I don't know what's so baffling about the concept of a user fee. I think people should have to pay what it costs to use water.
Representative Hagbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I don't quite understand this concept. Once again, Representative Wagenius, the money is going to build groundwater monitoring wells. Why do we need that? Can't we take water that we're pumping out of the ground from the water towers that are existing now and test that water? And I believe cities are doing that. I mean, they have, I think, water engineers or whatever they're called, working for the different cities, testing and monitoring that water now. I guess I don't understand the concept when you have water towers and wells pumping water all throughout the metropolitan area. We're pumping the water out of the ground. We could test that water now. It is being tested now. So I guess I don't understand the concept.
Representative Gaines, can I just briefly, I certainly sense we're talking past each other in a big way here, and I don't know what else to say about it, but this is simple stuff. Representative Wagenius.
What I am going to say right now is I'm afraid we're going to have to come back tonight because I told Representative Lanning he would be here. When we had the hearing on this bill, this study, DNR explained exactly why current wells could be helpful but can't answer the question. So I think what we're going to have to do tonight is to have DNR come back and explain it again for people who may have missed DNR's original testimony. And we can, I'm happy to do that, and we can do that tonight. So
we got Representative Dill. Let me go down the list here. I got out of order. You're passing. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going through trying to figure out some of the numbers of what this fee is actually talking about and how much we're actually paying. And I think I made my calculation slightly incorrectly, so I don't want to say them on the record yet. But I'm just trying to understand how we can have a problem with making sure that millions of people or several million people will have access to water for future generations and that we won't have to worry about it. We can pretty much expect the Mississippi River is going to be there, and quite frankly, I don't want my constituents paying as much as Representative Wagenius's constituents have to pay, and so I'm not, and I don't want to go down this equal payment for water thing that has been proposed with this amendment because we are paying less. But I do think there's a lot, something very important about knowing where our water is going to be in 10, 50, 100 years, and we don't have that information right now. And that's a very simple, we don't have the information we need to make sure our metropolitan area residents will have access to clean water within the lifetimes of the people in this room or the children of the people in this room. And we don't pay the full cost of water right now, and I don't necessarily think we should because I think it's something we all need to have access to. But paying a little more on an already subsidized service, an essential service, to make sure that service can continue seems like a pretty responsible thing to do. And when we're in a year of budgets that we're dealing with that haven't been responsible for a number of years, and we're looking at ongoing deficits, I don't think we're going to find the money necessarily to solve this problem unless we tie it very closely to the important essential service that we have. So I appreciate Representative Wagenius' work on this. I know we're going to come back and talk about it tonight, and I know I'll get pushed back on raising any sort of fee or, and this is, I think, very much a fee. When we have the sales tax increase, but it's a fee going to a very specific, quite expensive, but really important issue, and I appreciate you bringing it forward, and I'm glad Minneapolis isn't contributing to the need to know even more about our groundwater as well.
To the motion, Representative Tarkus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Wagenius, just a short question. Is it your intention that all uses of groundwater in these counties pay this fee?
Pardon?
Is it your intention that all uses of groundwater in these counties pay this fee?
Yes.
Surely there are many uses of groundwater in Minneapolis, not for drinking water, but I would guess there are large numbers of wells to for instance, irrigate a golf course or other uses.
They would certainly pay.
So how are we going to monitor every groundwater well and how much water they're using in these counties?
I think I am worried about the time here because we promised Representative Lanning. I know that that's a question, a second question that we will have Mr. Lacusmo answer tonight. So
if I may, and Representative Hackbart to the motion?
I'll pass.
Does everybody understand the motion in front of us? The amendment, I'm sorry. We're on line 6.18 after groundwater, insert, if I get this wrong, Representative Hackbart, insert and surface water. Representative McNamara. Okay. Any further comments to the amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No. Amendment fails. Okay, is there anybody in the audience that can't be back tonight here at 6 o'clock? We're going to take more testimony on this. Oh, they're telling me 6:30 now. Seeing none, the bill's laid over till tonight, 6:30. We have Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to have House File 1734 heard before the Environmental Finance Committee. Last week we met before the Environmental Policy Committee, and I know a number of you were involved in that, so we'll try to condense an overview on the bill so that those of you who heard it before don't have to suffer through it again. This bill was first introduced a year ago, and the only substantive change that has been made over the last year is that we've taken out the appropriations provision. There obviously is no money to appropriate to this bill, and so we've taken that out. Otherwise, the other changes are technical in nature and have to do with the process for petitioning. Essentially, what this bill does, members, is to say that in Minnesota, we ought to be managing our water resources not only on a watershed basis, but on a basin-wide basis as well. We've had established in Minnesota law for a long time provision for local watersheds to get organized and to even have taxing authority to be able to do water projects. But in spite of that, we still only have about a third of our watersheds in Minnesota that are organized. Only about a third. And we have no provision in existing law for basins to be able to get organized as a basin. And so currently, what happens if you have two watersheds that are at odds over some particular issue where it may affect one watershed negatively as opposed to positively for another? There's really no provision under state law that can help deal with that issue from a basin-wide perspective. We have nine river basins in Minnesota, and we only have two basins that have any kind of organization at all, but neither one are fully organized. The one that's most organized is my basin, the Red Basin up in northwest Minnesota. But we've got a major portion of the Red Basin that doesn't even have a watershed. It's the Otter Tail watershed. 70% of the water that comes by my community, Moorhead, comes from the Otter Tail watershed. 70% of it on a regular daily basis. I'm not talking flooding condition, but in a situation normal flow. But yet that watershed is not organized. And it clearly points to the fact that in order to deal with flooding issues, water quality issues, and the like, we have to be organized on a watershed and on a basin level. I think you're aware of the fact that MPCA has made the move so that all of their TMDLs are being done now on a watershed basis. And that's a move that I certainly applaud and thank them for making that effort. Very simply, members, if we're going to solve the flooding problems that we have in places like the Red Basin or in southeast Minnesota or other basins, if we're going to really solve water quality issues, and even though now we're dealing with flooding statewide, we've got parts of the state that also have water supply issues going forward. Southwest Minnesota, of course, has had a long-standing concern about water supply. The Red Basin, my home basin, is a semi-arid region. We're only a notch or two above a desert when it comes to annual precipitation. And so the Dust Bowl days of the 30s are bound to come back. And even though the focus now in recent time has been on flooding, water supply is clearly going to come back on our agenda in the, sometime in the not-too-distant future. And my whole bill, my whole approach is saying that if we're going to make progress on flooding, water quality, water supply, we absolutely have to do that by managing water on a watershed and basin level. Now, let me make it clear, this bill doesn't mandate anybody to do anything. This bill merely gives local entities the opportunity to get organized as a basin. If we were going to do this ideally, we'd go ahead and set them all up, and the bill I first introduced a couple, two, 3 years ago would have required it. But obviously, we're not ready to go there. What this bill does is to give local entities, counties, soil and water conservation districts, watersheds, the opportunity to get organized as a basin. And how they do that is a majority of those entities would have to petition Bowser and go through a petitioning process to get organized. And if they once met those criteria, they then could have each one of the watersheds that would appoint a member to a basin board. And what this basin board would do would be to address all of the issues from A to Z when it comes to water management in a plan. They would be required to develop a basin plan. And we don't envision in any way in this bill that a basin would be micromanaging water on the local level. That's up to the local officials to do. But somebody needs to coordinate. Someone needs to look after the water issues from a basin-wide perspective, and that's what this whole thing would do. And I think, too, I know you have a lot of involvement from the state agencies, but if we don't manage water from a basin perspective, or even a watershed, state agencies have to deal with countless counties, cities, townships, soil and water conservation districts. It's very difficult for state agencies to fulfill their obligations under Minnesota law to be able to do what they need to do. The last thing I would say, and then we'll open it up for any questions you might have, is that obviously you can't have a basin organization unless you've got some means of funding. And we all know that federal and state resources are limited and that we can't expect state and local government, state government and federal government to meet all of our financial needs when it comes to dealing with water resources. And so what this bill would do is allow a basin board, if the majority of their members were elected officials, I underscore that, that to impose a very limited property tax to support their operation. It would be maxed out at $1 million for a whole basin, or 0.048% of the taxable market value of all basin property. We did a run on one of the river basins, and that kind of taxing authority would amount to 2 or 3 cents an acre if it were to be imposed. But again, this is not required. It gives the local officials the opportunity to levy that particular tax. So with that, members, appreciate your consideration, and I'd be happy to take your questions.
I see three questions. You bring up an issue that is going to need lots of discussion, but it's a very important one, and I know there's some testifiers in the audience. So I'm going to take three questions and then have folks from the audience come in and just give a very quick perspective, too. First is Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lanning. Has a fiscal note been prepared on the bill?
Fiscal note has not yet been prepared. I know I'd expected that we were going to need to go to the Tax Committee, and we would need to have a note prepared.
Representative,
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Lanning, I like the idea of basin watershed management a lot. I think it's really smart. It's one of the few ways we can actually manage in a way that the land and water actually works. But I'm just trying to figure out, since we have so many groups with jurisdictional power over water and management, you might have said this, but just how could you explain a little bit more how the basin board would interact with local watershed districts, soil and water conservation districts, about, you know, with are already many groups with jurisdiction over water?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Knuth, the board would be made up of representatives from the watersheds that are within that basin. And they would not in any way be taking over, nor should they take over, the responsibilities of that local watershed or soil and water management district, but rather to coordinate what's going on and to focus on developing a plan that is a plan that encompasses the needs of the whole basin, where you make sure that there's a coordination between and among watersheds on a basin-wide policy, and the basin plan would also have to be reviewed by Bowser to make sure it is consistent with state plans and statutes relative to water management. This would not change the responsibilities of soil and water conservation districts or watersheds, but it would instead give those organizations, those entities, a mechanism to work through issues on a basin-wide level.
Representative Clark, very quick. Representative Lanning, do you know, does the governor support this local tax increase?
I have not asked him, Madam Chair and Representative Clark, but I will advocate for this if you allow this to go forward.
I think it would be important to know if the governor supports it. It would be important to know if the governor supports this local tax increase.
With that, I think there's some folks in the audience who would like to say a few words. Could we have them come down? How many are just folks want to speak? One? Okay, five. So minute apiece, if we could.
Madam Chair, Ron Harnick with the Red River Watershed Management Board. And we want to thank Representative Lanning for bringing this kind of proposal forward. We believe that it is very important that we manage water on a watershed river basin basis. And I'll focus on the Red River specifically and relate to flooding. If we're going to accomplish strong flood damage reduction, we can't just continue to build levees and dikes around people. We also need to hold water where it falls. And if you're going to do it on a comprehensive basis, you need to make a decision on what you want to achieve. Our objective is a 20% reduction in peak flows on the main stem. How do you do that? You determine what it's going to take within each major watershed, allocate a storage reduction to each one of those, and then each watershed has an obligation to achieve that objective towards the basin goal. You need an organizational structure that's going to provide for that. So we also believe that it builds on the strengths that local governments bring to the table. Everybody's got a role and responsibility in solving our water resource problems. It's not taking away from anybody's role, but it's building on the strengths that each brings to the table. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bowen. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. And again, we would like to thank Representative Lanning for all of his hard work on this legislation. You know, this morning as I was walking in the door, I saw this headline. I think this really says what we're here about today. Water's reach is near and far. And I think by taking this basin approach, you know, we're getting to the far elements of the of water that impacts our lives, and also with the watershed approach, we're dealing with the near impacts. So I mean, I think that really says it all. MOD, of course, being Association of Watershed Districts, we obviously support and advocate the watershed approach. And I think, you know, we have seen the trend line. We've got the MPCA now has moved to a watershed approach. Commissioner Holston was at our annual convention in December and announced that the DNR is moving that way as well. So I think this seems to me like a natural progression. And maybe we don't have everything perfect in this legislation, but I'm sure Representative Lanning and others are willing to sit down and work that out. And on another note, as I told the policy committee, the Association of Minnesota Counties, MASQUID, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, and MOD, as three organizations and basically the implementers at the local level, have agreed and are sitting down and starting to look at some of the issues, some of the efficiency and effectiveness issues in dealing with water management, and we intend on moving forward with that and over the course of the next year or two and looking at all these issues and trying to come back to you with ideas and suggestions and how we can improve those. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next one while you're going. A year or two, we don't have, we're going to have to talk about timeline here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Judy Erickson, and I'm representing the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And I just have a couple of comments. First, we do appreciate the changes that Representative Lanning did make to his bill from the must to may. But we are very concerned, I think, about the costs of this bill at a time that we have been cutting state agencies' budget. And to do this effectively, the Board of Water and Soil Resources we do need some funding for it. We cannot take on new programs in this climate where we're paring back, and we would be concerned and want to figure out how we would pay for the new program. The second thing I'd want to say is that the concept is good, and our association has been in discussions with Representative Lanning on this proposal, but at the local level, for soil and water conservation districts, water quality is but one delivery thing that we do for private landowners. And there is a much broader conservation delivery that soil and water conservations do than water quality. So as we look to the future and try to find efficiencies and effectiveness at the local level, we do want to look at a broader approach in efficiencies in delivery mechanisms. I mean, we do forestry and soil conservation, and this is one tool in the toolbox for water quality, but if we want to look at broader delivery opportunities at the local level, we'd like this to be a broader discussion. And in the context of that, our organization also has been actively working with the watershed districts and the counties in a proactive basis that we're undertaking to identify from the ground up, engaging our members and the members of the other associations in figuring out how we can be more effective in our delivery at the local level. So this is one concept, and but we're looking at others.
Madam Chair, if I could respond to one thing here. Obviously, I believe also that the land conservation practices are very much connected with water resource management. In fact, I helped form an international organization called the International Coalition of Land and Water Stewardship in the Red River Basin. And we didn't include anything in this bill dealing with land practice issues, land use issues, because we didn't want to step on the toes of Soil and Water Conservation District. And we wanted this approach to be coming so that we are not changing anything with Soil and Water Conservation Districts and their statutory authority and what they're able to do now. And so it's kind of interesting that that's being used against the bill when that's why we did.
We have two more folks that want to testify, and I want you both to be able to do this, but half a minute apiece, please, because some other folks took a little longer.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association. With me is Annalie Garlitz from the Association of Minnesota Counties. First, I want to acknowledge the extensive work that Representative Lanning has done on this issue and the heightened visibility it's given to the idea of coordination of water management. And we have shared with him amendments that will address some of the concerns that I'm going to enumerate right now. Basically, I would say that counties have four objectives in dealing with water management issues. First, that the entities that provide these services be accountable and that their spending and taxing be transparent to the taxpayer, to the residents of the area. Secondly, that it be delivered in as most efficient manner as possible. Third, that it does be coordinated as Representative Lanning has advocated. And fourth, that it be organic. Basically, the last two of those objectives are addressed in Representative Lanning's bill. It is organic, it's discretionary rather than mandatory, and it does provide coordination at a basin level. But with regards to the accountability and transparency, we think that that simply is not addressed in this bill as it stands right now. As I said, I've shared with Representative Lanning language that would, to some extent, address those concerns. The final issue with regards to efficiency, we have basically three entities right now that are responsible for water management over multiple water bodies.
You've taken Ms. Garlett's time.
We share the same concerns.
We have soil and water conservation districts, we have watershed districts, we have counties. It's possible in any jurisdiction that two, sometimes possibly even three, may be exercising that authority. This doesn't deal with delivering those services in as most efficient manner as possible, and the proposal before us does not deal with that issue whatsoever. That is what's sort of our longer-term objective.
Scarlett, do you have anything you want to add?
No, Madam Chair.
Members, the issue that Representative Lanning has brought up is a real one, and we have been talking for years and years and years about this issue. And now we've had agencies who are telling us we've got to operate on a watershed district, but our local units of government aren't ready. We have money to give out, but it's going to be done on a watershed basis, and some folks aren't ready. So the question is, I think the basic question is, can you be ready in January? Representative Lanning has given you kind of the one concept of how to do this, solve this problem. It's got to be done by January.
Madam Chair, I can respond, and certainly Ms. Garlett.
I don't think I want a response. Okay. I think the response is actually in the doing, not in the talking. So I think we need to see what can be done between now and January. And with that, I'd like to lay your bill on the table for possible. Lay it over. I'm sorry. We're not laying it on the table. Not laying it on the table. We're laying it over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Members, we're going to meet again at, as posted, 6:30 tonight in room 200 or 15 minutes after the Environment Policy Committee ends, whichever is later. If you'll notice in the notice that went out for this, it says that all amendments to this bill that's before you must be in committee staff by 5 p.m. And then we'll share any amendments with both sides, just to be fair. And with that, we are going to go into recess until the later of those two times that I mentioned. Thanks, members.